Nestled in a tiny room atop 125 Union Hill Trail, amongst the Georgia pines, this is the Grow People Podcast. A tradition like no other. That's six-time Grow People Podcast champion, Jason Gerdes. Fresh off a big win at Easter. Six gatherings. I'm David Stein. Joining us out on the course, or in this booth behind us, is Marcos Guardiola, and also Neon Keon Sadiji. Today's podcast will be broadcast without commercial interruption to bring you the best in theology and jocularity. The purpose of the Grow People Podcast is to help
grow people.
Okay. We couldn't miss that part.
Yeah.
I worked days on that intro.
And for those that are unaware, that is a
The theme from the Masters.
Masters.
Yes.
Masters theme. So yes. It's Masters week.
It is. I thought when you were wearing the green shirt on Sunday that was because of Masters week.
Yeah, it wasn't. But had I been smart enough, or you had seen it soon enough, then you could have told me. Well, you did tell me to wear it. I should have worn it this week, but I came ill prepared. It was the only shirt I had.
It's okay, because then it would be distracting. People would think, oh, he's just wearing that because it's Masters Sunday.
Well, they could have thought, wow, this guy's really culturally in tune.
He is. Yeah. Well, it's everywhere. And it's in this state.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were thinking of just blowing off the afternoon yesterday and driving out there. And I did this many times, late 90s, early 2000s, where I would just sit in the parking lot till about 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Somebody comes out from their practice round. And then you ask them if you can buy their ticket.
Mm.
We were thinking about doing that, but
so when you played there, didn't you?
Yes. Thanks for bringing it up, because There's really no humble way to say, oh, by the way,
I played Augusta.
I played Augusta a few times. my favorite thing is when I'm watching the tournament with some friends,
yeah,
and they're like totally into it. And I never bring up the fact that I played.
Yeah, I mean, you're not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You're not a humble bragger.
But I did bring my scorecard today to show that... I did play. I did play.
Did shoot.
One under on Amen Corner.
Really?
One under par. Could have been.
Wow.
Could have been three under.
Yeah.
I had birdie putts on those three holes. Any hoodles.
And what's the story of why it's called Amen Corner?
I don't remember the particular golfer, but he said once you get through that stretch of holes, then you breathe and go, Amen.
Amen. That's
over. Yeah. That is over. Could have been Jimmy DeMeritt or one of the other older guys, Gene Sarazen. But what I like to do when I'm watching with friends is they'll be like, oh, man, I can't believe how fast that green is. And I'll go, you know, when you're standing over that putt, it doesn't break quite as much as you think it does. I'm like, what? This is the only time of year where I will make it a point to make an egg salad sandwich, because that's one of the traditions.
Yeah. What is, again, I am not a golf aficionado, and I'm definitely not a egg salad aficionado.
You don't like the egg salad?
Oh, I'm not saying I don't.
Okay.
No, I'm saying, what is the tradition as to why is that?
So for years now, the prices have gone up a little bit. They're a little steep now. It's $1.50 for an egg salad sandwich.
That's what's amazing is like how cheap all the food is.
It is. But it was a dollar for many, many years. When I started going in 97, and I was there for Tiger's first win.
You were there?
Sitting on the 18th green.
You weren't.
This is a wild story. And probably the only venue. I can't work this into a message.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
So it was 1997. Mm-hmm. So 1996, he turns pro.
Yeah.
The only way he's going to qualify for the 97 Masters is if he wins a couple tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's thinking he's going to do that.
Yeah.
It's also the year of the Olympics here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm living in Pennsylvania. My best friend gets a subscription to the AJC.
Okay.
And starts buying up tickets to the 200 meter and the 400 meter dash at the Olympics here in Atlanta, knowing that that's Michael Johnson's race.
Gotcha.
Okay, so he was the track star of the day. So he buys up as many of those tickets as he can find. Now it is, I guess it was August was the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever that is. It's July. He gets a phone call or whatever, because he took out an ad in the AJC saying, hey, I've got these tickets.
Oh, really?
So he bought them. Then he took out an ad in the AJC and said, hey, I've got these tickets. Call me. Gets a call from a ticket broker and says, look, I've got 2 full-week badges for the Masters for 1997. I'll trade you for 2 Michael Johnson 200-meter dash.
Oh, my gosh.
So
wow.
At that point, Masters badges were going for about $1,000.
Yeah.
Face value, $125. But, yeah. But third market, about $1,000. Yeah. So he trades for these Masters badges. Tiger then goes on and wins 2 tournaments. He wins Milwaukee. He wins Disney. Gets an invitation to the Masters. Those badges skyrocket to $10,000.
Oh my gosh!
But we decide we're just
where's it gonna go?
We're just gonna go. This was free money. We're just going.
Yeah.
And the unwritten rule at the Masters is you can take 2 chairs each,
mm-hmm.
and wherever you put those chairs on the course when the gates open, those are your chairs. Nobody will sit in them.
Really?
Yeah. So we had a plan. We had it all mapped out. We were just going to go to the 18th green, put 2 chairs down there.
Yeah.
Go down to the 16th tee and put 2 chairs down there. Walk around the course the rest of the day. When the players go through 16, we'd beeline it up there to 18.
Yeah.
Worked our way through the crowd, and we were right there.
No.
Right there on the 18th green when he makes the final putt.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. It was pretty wild.
Did you pull out your film camera and take a picture? Oh, your Polaroid?
Absolutely. We had the disposable camera. Yeah,
disposable camera.
Well, no cameras allowed. They would have confiscated it. No cameras, no phones, nothing.
Yeah.
During the actual tournament, during the practice rounds.
Yes.
You can have a camera. You can't have a phone during a practice round.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but there was a fold-out spread on Tiger's win in Sports Illustrated, mm-hmm. and you can see the top of our heads.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. But the egg, get back to the egg salad, is for $1 on white bread. It's just egg and mayonnaise.
That's it.
And it's in a green wrapper, just in case it blows away. It blends in with grass.
With the grass.
Oh yeah.
That's smart.
They have thought of everything.
Yeah.
Pimento cheese. Do you like pimento cheese?
I do. Okay. I didn't as a kid, but I do now.
Yeah. It's an okay pimento cheese, but when you're at Amen Corner and you're sitting there and you're eating it, it's the best pimento cheese ever.
Yes.
And so we would bring home, as many egg salad sandwiches on the plane as we could.
Wow.
And they only last a certain amount of time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before they start to smell. But yeah,
I mean, they smell to begin with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. and then a couple years later, got an invitation to play. And it was 2 weeks before the Masters. And so the course was in game form.
Exactly.
Yeah. Grandstands were up. We stayed in the cabins.
Wow.
Yeah. And this probably was 2000, 2001-ish. It's pre-salvation, so pretty dark time in my life. In the darkest time of my life, I'm playing the best golf course. Yeah, yeah. I'm playing Pebble. I'm playing Augusta, Pine Valley. And we were just walking around after dinner one night, me and my friend Steve, and we were wearing sport coats and ties. And we went into one of the cabins just to check it out.
Yeah.
And we heard voices, and we went up the 5 or 6 steps to the living room, and sitting there in his green jacket was Arnold Palmer. Holding court.
No
way. Telling the bawdiest stories.
Wow.
And so we just, sorry. Yeah. Turned around and
you
left.
Didn't stay?
No.
Oh.
No. We didn't get the wave.
Oh.
Yeah. If we would have gotten the wave, we would have stayed.
You should have just walked in like you were meant to be there.
Hey, this is our cabin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should have walked out. And you are?
Yes, exactly. Sir, do you have a drink named after you?
there's so many stories I could tell, but I'll leave that for...
No, that's incredible,
another time.
I mean, not growing up here and not being a golfer, mm-hmm. I never... Oh, I mean, you could say I didn't appreciate it, but probably I just didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I knew it was a big deal from a sporting in 1997. That's when I graduated high school. Mm. And so that's when, so obviously I loved Jack Nicklaus,
Nicholas.
Yeah, I almost said Jack Nicholson, but I'm like, that's the movie star. So loved him. And then Tiger obviously was, I felt like, was the, my era mm-hmm. of golfers. And so I was completely aware of him and watching his, you know, rise to fame. But still, so I appreciated that, you mm-hmm. know. And in college, tried to play golf, but just was never very good at it. But I still didn't understand the complete allure of the Masters, you know, until I moved here. And then, like, when you see it on TV, and I mean, it's just one of the most beautiful mm-hmm. places on earth.
Right.
I mean, just the, how they take care of it, what it looks like, you know, and then driving, we've driven by it a couple times mm-hmm. and like, you try to, oh, there it is, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, now it's a whole different level, and understanding how hard it is to even get tickets and, you know.
The get-in price yesterday in the secondary market was, I think, $1,200.
Yeah.
Just for a practice round.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not going to pay that to go to a yes. practice round.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been there. I wanted to go with Leanna. You know, we thought it would be fun to yeah. go together. But, yeah, it's a incredible experience. It's one of those experiences that I wish that I would have been a believer at the time.
To appreciate more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah.
Oh, we were hanging.
Yep. Uh-oh. We got lights. There it is. Let there good. Be light.
Just like at Young Adults on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's right.
When
yeah.
when the lights came on, you said, hello.
Hello, Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would it be incredibly rude to respond to this text message during the podcast? Because it is extremely important.
No.
And it is my wife.
No, speak. I mean, you just mentioned her. So it's one of those things, if they call, you can just answer and be like, hello. What are you doing? I'm on the podcast.
or we could just take a break here and split. Well, no, because it's on video.
That's
it's
right.
on video. I absolutely have to share this contact with Leanna because she is on her way somewhere.
Yeah.
And that person is texting me.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. the address.
We could have just played and maybe we can dub it over some piano music.
Yes. You know. Oh, I should have played the Masters theme there.
You could have.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for bearing with me. That's not something that we would normally do.
No. Well, no. Again, it's fine.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So egg salad. Do you like other protein based salads?
Again, I didn't as a kid.
The chicken salad, the tuna salad.
I didn't like chicken salad. I didn't like tuna salad. And mainly because it depends on how your family did it. You know, like some people, when they make that, they put in relish and other things, you know? So I wasn't a fan of that.
Yeah. I don't like the relish in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then when I became a teenager and then I was trying to, you know, playing sports, trying to get, you know, build muscle, then I started making tuna fish with mayonnaise myself.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's an easy protein, and then I put some Fritos in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, well, I like this because I like fish.
Yeah.
I like mayonnaise. And I'm not a mustard guy.
Fritos.
Yeah, who doesn't want Fritos? So that became like a staple for me. And then I started realizing, oh, okay, so I do like this stuff, you know. And because, again, some people put grapes in it. This throwback to a previous episode. And I was like, oh, well, I like that. Mm-hmm. And even chicken salad now.
Right.
I like chicken salad chick. I love that, you know. So it took me a minute to appreciate, but it's like one of those things that almost, and I don't know if we've discussed shoe fly pies, you know.
That's an Amish thing. I'm yeah. very familiar with the shoe fly pie.
You know, but it's one of those, I always think like tuna fish salad, chicken salad, it feels like it's one of those things people are like, let's see what I've got in the fridge today. And it was an accident.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, because uh-huh. I don't know who thinks that up, you know.
A delicious accident.
Yes, exactly. It's one of those things. It's like a happy accident.
I think a chicken salad chick just opened in Cherokee County.
Where?
On 92.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Because we go to the one down in Kennesaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you do the Fancy Nancy or the Classic Carol?
Our favorite is the jalapeno one.
Oh.
No, sorry, 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 sir. That's not the favorite. The basil.
Mm.
The lemon basil.
Ooh, no.
That's our favorite
no,
one.
No, thanks.
Yeah, because of the seasoning. So I like that one, jalapeno. And then, I mean, I like them all pretty much. It's funny. Natalie likes just the classic. She doesn't like much else. But then me, Lindsay, and Jackson like pretty much all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah, the relish. I could go either way, but I'm not a fan of the relish. I like relish. I like relish on a hot dog. Relish on a hot dog is excellent.
I don't like it. Well, that's what's funny. I didn't even like pickles as a kid. Not your pet.
Okay.
But I like them now. Mm-hmm. But I don't like them in other things. You know, like if I want a pickle, I'm going to eat a pickle. But I don't want relish in, again, to me, relish and meat don't go together. Mm. It's like a salad. I joke about this. I don't know if we joked about it on here, but like a hamburger or a sandwich, I don't want vegetables on it. And I say this, I've said this 1,000 times in my life. If I wanted that, I would get a salad. Mm. So I like a salad. Mm-hmm. I love a sandwich. I don't want my salad and my sandwich together.
Okay.
So it's kind of the same philosophy.
All right. Let's unpack that.
there might be some psychological reasoning for this. But
How many people contacted you, text, email, in person about grapes?
Oh, gosh.
Based on the last podcast.
Well, I would say they mostly contacted Lindsay. Like she said, so she got a lot of feedback from it. I've had a lot more conversations about it. But Lindsay, you know, and I don't know if this is a male female thing, but I mean, she must get the text ratios between her and me. Like she must get 100 texts to my one, you know, so she gets way, I mean, her phone is lit up all the time with text messages. So she clearly got a lot of text messages about grapes. I didn't get so many text messages, but a lot of conversations. Yeah.
How about the suit? Did you get a lot of comments?
I definitely got more, way more comments about the suit.
Okay.
Yes. From just, you know, I wouldn't say, I mean, I got comments from random people, but then I also got texts from people that go to our church but maybe I haven't seen them in 6 months to a year, you know, just because of life and stuff. And then like just out of the blue text me, I love the suit. I got quite a few comments on that one. Yeah.
Will we see it again before next Easter?
You know, it's funny, man. No, probably not. Again, random conversation, like one guy, friend who texted, he's like, man, keep the suit. You look like a sportscaster, you know, and he meant as a compliment. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we talked about, no, this is our first one after Easter. Isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Okay. It all runs together. I enjoy wearing a suit. I enjoy dressing up. But preaching in one, no. Mm-hmm. I could not do that. You know, that's just not, I mean, I could, but you know what I'm saying? Like my choice, it would be hard for me to work at a church where the expectation was I have to preach in a suit.
Yeah. Preaching in a suit, if you're standing behind a podium, a big podium, and you're not moving and you're reading off a manuscript, that's one thing, but moving around and all the hand gestures
and that's half of it. It's not just, I don't like having that much material on, because you know, it's like wearing a suit to me, it is, and again, I'm, you know, if I was in a business setting or something, again, wearing it every day, going to an office, it wouldn't be like sweating all the time, you know what I mean, because it's not like you're outside. But the idea of wearing multiple layers and preaching, heck no, because again, I sweat already. And so, yeah, but to your point, that's a better way to explain it. I just move too much to have a suit. And when I have a suit on, like it kind of mentally restricts you in your mind, you know, cause I can't move as much, you know, to where, you know, those that attend our church or watch my messages, I move way too much, to have a suit on. So yeah, it's not just that I don't like sweating, but I don't like feeling, it feels too claustrophobic to me. I don't like that feeling. Like if you go watch my message, again, not that I'm suggesting someone do this, but I study myself. You know, I watch my messages back. I listen to last week's message yesterday. I watched the whole thing back. But if you watch the Easter message, my movements are restricted.
They are. Yeah.
My hands do different things than when I'm in a suit or not in a suit. So yeah, for that perspective, it just doesn't fit me from a style, not even like a, I'm not talking about a fashion style. I'm talking about a preaching style.
Well, we're going to have to wait until the third week of April, 2025 for the suit to have risen.
Yeah, exactly. I do feel like now a precedent has been created that if I don't wear a suit on Easter, it'd be like a letdown.
Yeah.
But what was funny, dude, it hasn't always been this way, but I've got a lot of friends in ministry and I don't typically watch all their sermons, but on Easter, you know, you're aware of what other churches are doing. Mm-hmm. And so after Easter, I looked at several different friends and it seems like all my friends wore suits. Hmm. Now, most of them were like me and not wearing a tie. Cause I couldn't do that. That was too, you know, I did that when we were in Africa and oh, that liked to kill me. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if everybody's up in their game or everybody's wife was like, listen, you know, this is what you need to do.
Well, there were more suits in the congregation Easter Sunday than I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Hmm. So I think there was something in the air.
Yeah. Something like there was a, it's not like a memo went out.
We're going to church and we're going to get dressed up. And, you know, there obviously is no biblical precedent for that.
No. And honestly, in my younger years, that was a reason why I didn't like it because I didn't like, and I'm not saying people are wrong in what I'm about to say, but I don't like the connotation of it is, well, it's God. So I got to give my best, you know? Well, I respect that,
sure.
You know, on one level, like it is a way to honor God. Yes. I want to honor God, but I don't like the idea that somehow my best is like the Bible says, my righteousness is like filthy rags. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I don't like the idea that I got to give my best to God for him to love me more or to be acceptable. And that becomes an unconscious thing in a church where you have to meet kind of a standard to get in. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's why that would be the other reason why I wouldn't wear a suit is I don't want people coming to church feeling like they got to clean themselves up to come to church. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that.
Right.
But I understand the idea that you want to give God your best or you want to honor God, you know, again, obviously, clearly the Bible says that, but it always makes me laugh. Like, I'll just never forget growing up. Like, again, we've had this conversation. I didn't go to church, but when I started going to church as a teenager, it was a church where everybody wore suits. Well, the deacons in the Southern Baptist Church, typically the deacons are your board or your elders or whatever. But at this little country church, there'd be deacons in suits, but they'd be outside smoking. You know, before the church. And I was like, that's kind of an oxymoron, you know what I mean? And so they were wearing suits and then come in and would reek of smoke and worship Jesus. Again, not that it's a sin to smoke, although you could maybe make an argument because it's destroying your body. But it just was like, it was funny to me that, like, if you want to smoke, smoke, but don't act like wearing a suit somehow makes you better, you know.
I've spoken to first-time guests over the years, and you know, if they're coming from a church where the pastor wore a suit every week, and they may say it was a little different.
Yes, exactly.
You know, seeing a pastor wearing, you know, just a shirt and pants, and I'd be like, yeah, and I leave it there.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
because I know that once somebody spends some time here,
totally,
they'll see that. You know, this kind of stuff has nothing to do with our growth.
No, and I always think about it, you know, obviously Martin Luther King, his famous quote of not judging people by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Mm-hmm. So I'm coming at it from that way. Mm-hmm. Like, don't judge me based upon the, in my case, not the color of my skin, but the suit, you know, in this context mm-hmm. of a conversation, judge me by the content
right.
of my character as shown in my message or in the speaking. Judge that. Don't judge the outward appearance. But then there's also, like my former pastor used to say in 1 Samuel, where it says, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. You know, his joke was always like, I know God looks at the heart, but man does look at the outward appearance. Mm-hmm. So your outward appearance matters. So again, there's certain things, there's certain, like Lindsay would not let me preach in shorts, you know, and I've had
this. Neither would I.
Yeah, exactly. To where when I was a student pastor, I did. And I've had this conversation with a couple of our board members, and they've jokingly, it's like, yeah, we wouldn't let you preach in shorts either. So there's obviously, there's boundaries
yes.
to it. You know what I mean? But I do think that you can go, just like I've said many times, on the east side of the road is a ditch. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to be over here on the ditch thinking I have to wear a suit to have credibility. But over here, I'm not going to show up dressed like a slob either. Mm-hmm. You know? So anyway.
I wore shorts for one of the team member parties, and I've never felt more uncomfortable in my life walking up on that stage in shorts.
Yeah. I remember at one time I saw, it was here when I was at Revolution. I went out to eat somewhere, and I was wearing Dickie shorts, a hoodie, and a hat, which obviously looks completely different. And I saw somebody from our church, and they looked at me and then looked at me and looked at me and then finally realized it was me. And then made a comment of like, and I can't remember exactly how and they weren't trying to be mean, but it was like, what? They were like, what are you doing? Are you trying to fit in? Are you trying to, like, they were so shocked that mm-hmm. I was wearing shorts, a hoodie yeah. and a hat that they thought I was like trying to look cool. You
yeah.
know? I'm like, yeah, no, this is what I wear.
Yeah.
Like in a normal day, mm-hmm. I would wear, you know, shorts, my rainbow sandals or some tennis shoes, a hoodie and a hat.
Yeah.
Like that's me, you know, but to them, they thought I was trying hard to look like a teenager. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly how they said it, but I remember their comment thinking, that's like the weirdest thing in the world for you to say to me right now.
and not rainbow sandals in the rainbow.
No, okay. No, the company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Okay.
Well, people might not know there's a company, so.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to clarify that.
Yeah.
No, there's a company. I mean, it is based out of California, but they just make really good sandals. Yeah.
Whispering down the lane. You can't believe what they were promoting.
No. Well, yeah, sadly, I think people forget the rainbow was God's creation.
Turns out. Yeah. And the vacuum cleaner. I loved the vacuum
cleaner. Oh, the rainbow vacuum cleaners. Yeah, they're still around.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. I would still have mine from 35 years ago if Leanna would let me. But, you know, it's big, it's bulky. It's, yeah.
Yeah, my in-laws have one, and my father-in-law loves that thing. Mm. Like, when he first bought it, because they are not cheap. They're a couple thousand mm-hmm. dollars. When he first bought it, he's kind of a clean freak in that way. Or I shouldn't say a clean freak as much as he's an energizer bunny. He's always doing mm-hmm. something. So he would tell us how many hours he spent going around cleaning everything and then how it was running. And then he would pull out the water tray and show us all the dirt. Yeah. I'm like, you don't have to sell us on it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You want me to come to your house? You know, yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved all the attachments and then pouring out the water and putting in clean water. And
yeah,
I was doing their commercials like 35 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And so I got a free one and it they don't break.
Yeah. Again, they're amazing machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
This has been a random opening
here. Totally. Totally. Let's talk about this past week's message. I have heard from numerous people, various different things that stood out to them, that spoke to them, that convicted them, that were hard things to hear.
Yeah.
But it was such a powerful message and a reminder of how deceptive the enemy is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, sorry. It was, you know, obviously we've been preaching through the letter to the Ephesians, and initially I thought about preaching Easter on Ephesians 5:1-2, you know, where it talks about, you know, be imitators of God as beloved children and forgive you know, or walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up as a sacrifice. So I was going to kind of run with that on Easter, but then when we settled on the theme of darkness, your hour is over, I was like, oh, let's make that more of a standalone, you know, message. Cause I thought that was just a powerful point, you know, to highlight. So then I was like, okay, well, cool. I can do those two verses kind of around like before and after Easter, kind of sandwich it. So I was excited about that. But then verse 3 of Ephesians 5, you know, he just clearly, he's like, but sexual immorality. And I'm like, man, I don't want to talk about that right after Easter. Like, you know, because Easter obviously was so great, you know, and don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not ashamed of the Bible. But speaking of a lot of my friends that were wearing suits, what a lot of guys or a lot of churches do is they'll either start a new series on Easter, mm-hmm. or they'll start a new series right after Easter.
Sure.
And there, a lot of times will be focused on helping new believers or like an apologetics message. Like one friend is doing a whole series on Jesus, like who is Jesus? Others are doing, you know, like a lot of churches will start a new series last weekend and try to, as a way to try to connect people, mm-hmm. you know, from Easter. And then I was talking about sexual immorality.
show us funny pictures.
Yeah, I did show funny pictures. So when I first started thinking about it, again, I'm not ashamed at all, clearly. But that was just kind of a knee-jerk reaction, mm-hmm. my first thought.
Sure.
But then when I started digging into it, I thought, oh, this is a perfect message right after Easter. Mm-hmm. Because when you go back into verse 1 and 2, like I did... You're basing it in love, you know? And so to take a spin on it, the way that we talked about it last week of like, hey, walk as someone who's loved or behave as someone who's loved, like everything God did, not only creating us, but in saving us in Jesus was because he loved us. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's true, then I need to live as though I'm loved, mm-hmm. walk in a way that, you know, behave in a way that I'm beloved. Well, when you come at it from that slant, then you see all the commands, including, you know, fleeing sexual immorality, as God telling me something because he loves me, you know, because he cares and he is giving us directions because he is God. He knows better. So taking it from that angle, I'm like, okay, this is perfect. And then getting into the idea of like the pictures of like, there's certain things that fit and certain things that don't fit. So then I was thinking, okay, what's a way to show that? And that's when I thought of like one of these is not like the other. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, okay, that's a good idea. Well, then as I keep studying Ephesians and getting into verse five, when he says anyone who is, I'm like, okay, now I need to talk about identity. And then clearly like that language, it sparked in my mind another verse, you know, 1 Corinthians, where Paul, same guy, deals with the very similar issues. But yet in 1 Corinthians, the list is longer, mm-hmm. you know, and not worse, but like clearly says some things that are culturally not acceptable today. So then I'm like, dang it. Like, first I'm talking about sexual immorality. Now we're digging into it even more. But again, that's the... To me, and Pastor Chad actually said this in our meeting yesterday, that's the beauty and power of preaching through books. Mm-hmm. Like the Bible's determining what we say.
Sure.
Isn't me. Like this isn't me like pulling out something I just want to say to people. This is me just like, well, here it is. Mm-hmm. You know? So it wasn't a tough message per se to preach, but it is a message that I wanted to be sensitive to cultural, you know, misgivings about it. So then talking about, you know, particularly where it says in 1 Corinthians about, you know, this longer list, sexual immorality, you know, covetousness, idolatry, but then it adds to it, adultery, men who practice homosexuality. So I felt, okay, this is a unique, and we actually talked about it on here. But it was a unique opportunity to address that specific issue to say, hey, listen, there's a lot of deception around what you're being told what this word means. So let me clarify this for you. And I got several people texting me or talking afterwards, like saying, thank you for clarifying that, because I've heard a lot of things about, yeah, that word wasn't always in the New Testament, and it wasn't. But because the word wasn't even invented. And so it's sparked a lot of conversations. So in a good way, but I think it, again, turned out to be a great time to address it. But the overarching theme that I wanted to say, which we wanted to unpack a little on here, is it's really not about the specific sins. And I think that's what most modern readers will read that and just highlight that, you mm-hmm. know? And again, like I said, no one really takes issue with the other ones, like thieves, adultery, and no one would have a problem with the idea if someone said, no, I am an adulterer who happens to be Christian. We'd be like, what?
Mm-hmm.
No. Or if someone said, I am a thief who happens to be Christian, or I am a swindler who happens to be Christian, or I am, I am a drunkard who happens to be Christian. We would never use that line of reasoning the way we do with that particular one mm-hmm. of same sex sexual activity or homosexuality. Maybe there are, but typically within the Christian space, mm-hmm. no one would be like, well, that's okay mm-hmm. to say I'm an adulterer who happens to be Christian, but yet it's somehow okay in that particular instance. And again, it's not about the specific sin as much as it is about the idolatry behind it.
And Paul is not giving an exhaustive list.
He's not giving an exhaustive, there's clearly more things than just this list, because he does that elsewhere as well. But Paul is just naming some things to try to get the point across to say, hey, because he says in verse 10 and 11, this you were these things, but you've been washed. You're not these things now. And that was the overarching point that I was trying to make is like, listen, we can't, and I tried to illustrate it with my hands, mm-hmm. which if I had a suit on, I wouldn't have been able to do. but illustrating it with my hands to try to say, listen, man, the main point that Paul is trying to say is idolatry. Like if I elevate something, whether it's sexuality, whether it's gender identity, or whether it's other things in that list,
right.
You know, drinking, you know, adultery, whatever it is, if I elevate that above my Christianity, and for those listening, I'm illustrating with my hands again, but it's the idea of like a pyramid, what's on top,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he talks about the idea of inheritance. Well, if God is at the top of my life, or you might say at the center of my life, if God is my identity, if God is the definition of my isness, you know, who God is defines who I am, is what I'm trying to say. If that's true, then heaven is going to be about me getting the inheritance of what I want most. I want God. So therefore, my inheritance is going to be God, and I'm going to be supremely satisfied in God because that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my inheritance. But what Paul was trying to make the argument is, but if God is not what you want most now, if he's not at the top of your life, if God isn't the is that defines your isness, if who God is isn't defining who you are, then your inheritance for all eternity won't be God.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have no inheritance, because if you don't want God most now, why would you get God then?
That was very convicting.
Yeah, and it should be. But I think that is the major overarching theme of what Paul is trying to communicate. But just like, you know, people they hear what they want to hear. You know, and so then they highlight that one thing and say, well, hold on. Are you saying, you know, if someone is this, then they're going to hell? Well, you're missing the forest for the trees here.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is anyone with anything, if they elevate it over God, then they won't get God. Why would they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense from a logical standpoint. Like, for example, in my relationship with Lindsay, you know, my wife. Lindsay is what I want most in my relationship. And so therefore, like, and, you know, we have children and, but I tell my kids all the time, listen, I love your mom more than I love you because Lindsay's what I want most. So if Lindsay's what I want most, then when my kids leave, you know, and hopefully build their own life, and then I'm still getting what I want most. Now, do I love my kids? Yes. Mm-hmm. And do I want a strong relationship with my kids? Yes. Do I want them to come back home? Yes. Do I want to see their kids? Yes. But I'm not going to be disappointed, or I'm not going to be like, I don't know who I am anymore, because I still have Lindsay. Mm-hmm. She's what I want most in the relationship. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, then Lindsay is honored and glorified in that. But imagine being in a relationship and Lindsay's not what I want most, or your spouse is not what you want most. You just want things from them. Well, how devalued is that person? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I don't want you most. You know, I want that you can give me kids, or I want that you can give me sex, or I want that you make me look good, you know. Well, I want that most. So I'm just using you to get what I want most. Well, that's how a lot of people look at God. A lot of people look at God as, I'm using God to get what I want most. And what I want most is a healthy life, or I want my sexuality most. And I'm good with God as long as God gives me what I want most. Well, that's not how relationships work. How devaluing that is to God, how dishonoring that is to God. But yet, that makes sense to us when it comes to human relationships. Because if Lindsay's not what I want most, and I'm using Lindsay, then that's an exploitative relationship. I'm exploiting Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I'm abusing Lindsay because I'm not honoring Lindsay. I'm not finding my joy and satisfaction in Lindsay. So we get that, and no one wants that kind of relationship. But when it comes to God, it's like, we're fine with that kind of relationship. You know, we're fine with it as long as God gives us what we want. And that's why, and we were talking about this offline earlier, the second series I ever preached here, back in 2010, which was the first series that I brought to the table, because obviously Revolution existed before me.
Yep.
And I wasn't the founding pastor. And so they went through a pastoral transition. And in January of 2010, I came, they had already had one series planned. And so I came and spoke that, but then it was like in February or March of that year, it was the first series where they looked to me, you know, as the new lead pastor, and like, hey, what are we going to talk about? Well, I just read a book from Tim Keller, one of my favorite pastors, authors, I mention him all the time, called Counterfeit Gods. Mm-hmm.
Great book.
Fantastic book. And what Keller deals with in that book, it was kind of a groundbreaking book at mm-hmm. the time, and it's not that thick or hard to read, and it's in a classic Keller style, is Keller kind of peels back the curtain to say, listen, the sin behind all sins is idolatry. Mm-hmm. So it's not about sex or money or power. It's about, because that's what we tend to think about, you know. Again, to your point, like the deception, destruction, or deception, disobedience, destruction, we tend to think about the disobedience first. Like, well, yeah, I disobeyed God's commands. And clearly we will be judged for that. But we don't attack the deception behind the disobedience. And that's what Paul, I think, was trying to say, and why I wanted to end it where we did, was like, no, there's a deception behind it. Mm-hmm. And what is the deception? The deception, just like Satan in the Garden of Eden, the deception was, you can't trust God. He doesn't have your best interests at heart. You're your own God. So the deception behind the disobedience was idolatry, mm-hmm. was God's holding out on you. He doesn't love you. If he loved you, he wouldn't tell you not to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, clearly you have these desires that looks good to you. God wouldn't make you to have these desires and then tell you don't do that. You know, so clearly, you know, God's wrong, which is the whole rationale today, you know, of whether it is sexuality or gender or whatever it is, the rationale is, well, this is how I feel, and God wouldn't make me to feel this way. so therefore, like, I'm not wrong in acting on these feelings. So that the deception behind that, though, is you'll actually find joy. Like, instead of having God at the apex of your life or the center of your life, it's no, you're actually smarter than God. And so let's change that. Let's shift that. It's okay to still, quote unquote, love God and follow, but at the end of the day, you get to call the shots. Mm-hmm. You know, you are, your isness is defined by yourself, not by him. That's the deception.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was trying to communicate to people. And again, why I tried to illustrate it that way is when I made the point of, which again, I was proud of the alliteration of it, but if your isness is defined by immorality, impurity, or idolatry, then you have no inheritance. If your being is defined by anything else other than God, who is the essence of being, then you have no inheritance with God. And so I hope that was very eye-opening to people in that sense, to see in their own life how they've been deceived.
It was totally eye-opening. The illustration of the pyramid, it could not have been more clear. And that's what I talked to most with people afterwards and then into this week was, yeah, I never really thought of, hey, if God is not here and my struggle is above God, then those are out of whack.
Yes.
But we can deal with, hey, God's up here at the top and I'm struggling with this. We can deal with that.
100%. And God can, God clearly deals with that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why I love how Paul, obviously directed by the Holy Spirit, and we'll actually get into it more this week. And so if you liked it last week, you'll like it more this week. If you didn't like it last week, you'll like it less this week.
how's that for an invitation? Yeah,
how's that for, come on back, you know.
People want that though.
Yes.
People want the truth.
Yes. Well, and this is, I'll give you a teaser for those that are listening. So this is why it pays to listen to the podcast.
It does.
Become a Plus subscriber.
commercial free today, yes, by the
exactly.
way.
Yes, exactly.
It's always commercial free.
Paul actually says starting in verse 7, and then, so we'll do 7 through 14 this week. But he says, don't be partakers with them. And then he says, his whole argument is for, you were darkness. Now you are light. Notice what he said there. He didn't say, for you practiced darkness or you did darkness. He says, no, you were.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're not. He's talking about being. He's talking about identity. He's saying, listen, no, you weren't just in the dark. You were darkness.
Mm.
You
wow.
were the darkness. You were the evil. You were the sin. And that's, and even going back to Easter, and there's been, I wouldn't say confusion about this, but I've gotten a lot of questions about this when I talked about Jesus took on the darkness. Yes, I was saying in one level, he took on the powers of darkness, because Colossians references that. Jesus himself said it in John 12, he was going to throw out the ruler of this world and how he disarmed the powers and principalities of darkness. He freed us. So yes, in one simultaneous act, Jesus was taking on darkness and darkness. And I tried to illustrate that by the physical example of the darkness. So Jesus took on those supernatural powers, yes, but those supernatural powers was also our sin. It was the power of evil or the power of deception through human choices mm-hmm. that led to human sin, which led to wrath. Jesus took on all of that. So Jesus wasn't just taking on the powers of darkness. He was also taking on the weight of our sin, because we were darkness. We were it. Now we're not it. And so that's why then Paul goes on to say, so don't practice the unfruitful works of darkness. You know, so the point again is from that pyramid idea is, all of us still sin and struggle with sin. But if who I am is a child of God who struggles with sin, that's okay. Because I'm a child of God and I've been born into the family of God, which is a legal declaration. Nothing can change my status now as a child, just like my kids.
Mm-hmm.
My son is my son. My daughter is my daughter. no matter what they do, they have legal standing with me mm-hmm. and Lindsay. They are our children and they're loved by us and they struggle. But what happens is people say they'll elevate the struggle to the identity and say, no, I am, this is what we were saying earlier. I am this, I am, you know, homosexual. I am gay. I am transgender. I am whatever. Well, now we're getting into real dangerous territory because we're talking about identity. Mm-hmm. We're talking about being now, and we are elevating something that God clearly calls sin to identity. You know, now we do this all the time, not just with sexuality, because he also talks about greed. You know, you can also do this with your national, well, let me just give it a very simple, like I'm a Christian, then I'm an American. Mm-hmm. So my Christianity has to inform my nationality.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that go like this. I'm an American who happens to be Christian. Mm-hmm. That's idolatry.
Right.
You know, this is why I don't like the phrase God and country. And I'm not downing on military or anybody that would say, I understand what they're saying, but we can't equate those two as they're equal. Mm-hmm. It's God then country, you know? So anything in your life, and again, it's not, we were clearly talking about bad things, but an idol can be a good thing that you elevate to a God thing.
Oh, totally.
You know,
totally.
A good thing. And that's what Keller talks about in the book. It can be a good thing that you elevate to the ultimate thing. And Keller asks a bunch of, again, I would highly recommend this book to everybody. He talks about, like, you can identify an idol by what are your nightmares? Your nightmares of, if I lost this, I don't know who I would be.
Yep.
You know, well, you're yeah. now getting at something that's an mm-hmm. idol in your life.
Yes.
You know, if I lost, if I lost my life or I lost my health, or like for us, if I lost my job, mm-hmm. you know, I have to be very, we in ministry have to be very careful not to let the phrase, I am a pastor, become our identity again. So it's yes. like, I'm a child of God who happens to be a pastor. I can't say I'm a pastor mm-hmm. as that's my core identity. Cause right. I won't always be a pastor.
Right.
You know? There's been a ton of dudes and ladies in ministry that have done that and it got taken away from them and they lost themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't know who they are.
Right.
You know? So again, you can look at your nightmares. What are the things you're most afraid of that if you lost it, you wouldn't know who you are. You could also look at it from the positive thing of like, what are the things that you dream about? What are your dreams? You know, like if your dream is, I want to be married. I want to have kids. I want to have, you know, a house, a car, 2.5 kids, all those things. None of those things are bad. None of those things are sinful. Mm-hmm. You know, having a house, having a job, having money, having a spouse, having kids, all gifts from God. But if that's what captivates your imagination more than anything else, then that's the roots of idolatry.
Oh, totally. And you know, I've lived that for decades.
Yeah.
I remember the first radio gig that I got fired from. And if you're in radio and you haven't been fired, that's extremely rare.
Really?
Yeah, extremely rare. I had a rare career of 34 years where I only worked for a handful of places.
Yeah.
Less than that. Maybe one, two, three, four, five places.
Yeah.
For 35 years. So that's extremely rare because you get taken out on a whim.
Yes.
Okay. We're a top 40 station. We're going to be a country station. You're out.
Yeah.
That's just the way it happens.
Yeah.
But after 10 years of doing a morning show in the 90s, I was let go.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm lost.
Yes.
I didn't have Jesus.
Yeah.
So that there's no question.
Exactly.
That was my identity.
Yes.
So, you know, there are times in our lives as non-believers and believers.
Totally.
Where we fall into identity crisis of having something elevated above God. So I totally get that.
Well, and that's where, you know, the popular phrase of a midlife crisis, whatever, you just kind of referenced it. It's not a midlife crisis. It's an identity crisis. That's mm-hmm. what it is.
Yeah.
And in our country right now, I would say we're having an identity crisis. One counselor years ago, who's actually used to be a part of our church, he's actually sadly passed away, but he said it's schizophrenia more than anything else, because schizophrenia is a battle of identities. And again, I'm not a counselor, but it's like, we don't know who we are and we kind of keep switching back and forth. That's the essence of it. And so, yeah, we're sadly creating generation after generation of people that are being deceived, that are being told, this is your identity, this is your identity. And that's the insane thing. The insane thing, again, it's not about a particular sin. It's not about same-sex sexuality. Let's say if I'm a male, I am a male. Well, I don't have to let's say. I am a male. And obviously, I'm attracted to the opposite sex because I'm married to a woman. So Lindsay is my wife. Well, in the same way, I have to realize being married to a woman is not the thing that's going to make me happy. Only God can. Mm-hmm. Well, why would I think then if being married to a man would actually do it? Mm. So the sin behind the sin of homosexuality is not so much just I switched genders or I switched attractions from opposite sex to same sex. The sin behind the sin is thinking that that'll actually make me happy. And I think that's what gets lost in the conversation. That's the insanity. Mm-hmm. The insanity is thinking, oh yeah, my happiness, I haven't found happiness in opposite sex relationships, so I need to find in same sex relationships. No. The sin behind the sin is thinking that another human being can actually make you happy, whether it's male or female. Mm-hmm. Or in the same way, I am a male. You know, we are males because God makes them male and female. But my core identity is not my maleness. My core identity is my Christianity. It's Christ. Well, in the same way, I can't find satisfaction in me being my maleness. Well, I won't find satisfaction either in me trying to be a female. Mm-hmm. So the sin behind the sin, or the lie behind the lie, or the deception behind the disobedience, there's the disobedience of the sin. The deception behind it is, oh, this is what'll make you happy. You know, and that's the insanity of it. And that's the part that I'm trying to say. It's not so much, clearly I wanted people to understand what that word was saying in First Corinthians. But what I was trying to say behind it is the deception is that will actually make you happy when it won't.
Part two coming up this weekend.
Part two. Yeah.
and I'm sure that these next several weeks in Ephesians, when we get to parenting and marriage and, you know, spiritual battles.
Yeah.
Don't miss it.
No, in fact, to your point of that, and I just thought about this, I don't think it's any coincidence that Paul opens up the first three chapters talking about what God did. And then, you know, chapter 4 and 5, the commands of what we're supposed to do. And then in chapter 6, he talks about spiritual warfare. Hmm. Why? Because we face a real enemy, a real deceiver, who is trying to deceive people about what God did and what they should do. Mm. You know, so chapter 6 is kind of like a great culminating chapter to everything that he said when he's trying to say, listen, there's someone out there that's trying to deceive you to tell you the exact opposite of everything I just told you.
Wow.
So you got to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't fight against flesh and blood. We fight against powers and principalities of this cosmic darkness, as he says it. And yes, Jesus said, in Jesus' name, we now have power over darkness. But that doesn't mean that darkness isn't still powerful.
Right.
It's still powerful and it's still working. And it's behind every deception is a darkness. But now in Jesus' name, we have light to overcome it. So on Easter, it's not like Jesus obliterated it in the sense of like he did away with it. No, he now gave us power over it.
Wow.
So when he said your hours, he didn't say your hours over, but we say your hours over, your power is over. Now in the name of Jesus, I just turn the light on. I say the truth and darkness has to flee. So as Christians, I think, in fact, we'll get into it this week when Paul says, don't participate with them, instead expose it. expose the darkness. Well, that's not about exposing the darkness. There's a lot of Christians that are like, I'm just trying to expose it. And they're always trying to, no, that's not the point. The point is, he's saying, be a person in love who's turning the light on in people's lives. You know, lovingly show them the light. Don't just try to expose them, you know, in that sense. But try to turn the light on in their life through how you love them. That's how you expose it. You know, that's how you bring to light the sin behind their sin. That's the conversation I would have with somebody who's struggling with same-sex sexuality or gender identity. I would have the conversation that I just articulated, say, hold on a second. Let's set this aside from saying this is a sin. We're going to agree to disagree on that. But let's back up one. Do you think that changing this will make you happy? You think changing your gender is going to make you happy? You think changing who you're attracted to is going to make you happy? That's the lie. And so that would be kind of a line of reasoning that I would have with someone I love to say, listen, that's the insanity behind what you're saying, is you're now elevating this to identity. And there's only one thing that can handle the weight of your identity, and that's God.
That is a powerful statement to end the podcast today. And I'm just thankful, again, I've said this many, many times, I'm thankful for a church that preaches this truth.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring this full circle, we got to go back to the Masters. You were telling me about something that Scottie Scheffler talked about in his press conference yesterday at Augusta. That was really good.
It was incredible. And I mean, Jackson and I, my son, we are huge Scottie fans because he went to the University of Texas. And so we love him for that, but now he's the number one golfer in the world.
Yeah.
And so just an incredible golfer, but he's just seems to be an incredible dude because he was asked this question. In fact, I just saw the clip this morning. He was, you know, practicing, doing the practice rounds. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you weren't there.
No.
Eating an egg salad and watching him. But they asked him a question, something to the effect of like, you know, obviously you're at the top of your game. How much does golf define you, or, you know, something to that effect. And he goes, you know, golf is what I do. It's not who I am. Mm. Like, it's a big part of my life. And then he kind of gets quiet for a second and says, you know, well, he laughs about, he's like, you might want to ask my wife that. But then, and you could tell, in my opinion, he was kind of struggling, like not with his answer, but he wanted to make sure he said the right thing. So he wanted to think about it before saying. And then he said, you know, I'm a person of faith. I believe in Jesus and, you know, a creator. And, you know, I believe I'm gifted to play golf, but that doesn't define me. Mm. My faith in Jesus is what defines me. And I thought, man, that's a great example of what we're talking about right here. I mean, this guy's the number one golfer in the world.
In the world.
You know, and yet that's not at the top. You know, that is not, he's a Christian who's a golfer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what defines him, and that's what I was saying, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like, golf is obviously not a bad thing, although if you're bad at it, you know, but clearly he's the best.
Golf can be an idol.
It can be an idol. It's a huge idol.
Yeah.
In people's lives. And this is the dude who is at the pinnacle.
Yes.
I don't think he is on team pinnacle, but, he's at that was a pun.
Yeah. I was like, do they even make pinnacles anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know.
I mean, I find them in the woods and I throw them further into the woods.
Yeah. Not me, because my goal in golf is to leave with more golf balls than what I started with. I don't care what I shot. I just don't want to have a net loss of golf balls. But again, it's just amazing because here's a guy who is the best in the world, and yet that doesn't define him.
Mm.
You know, what defines him is his faith in Jesus. And again, it makes me think, I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking. It makes me think about how Jesus said in Matthew 6:24, no one can serve two masters. And masters.
Masters. Well played.
It's like, yes. Who's your masters?
Yes.
You know. There's
Marcos, there's the title.
There's the title. We've come full circle now. But Jesus says no one can serve two masters. You will either love one and hate the other, or serve one and or hate the other. And Jesus says no one can love or serve God and money, but it's not just money. You know, you could take that out and just put a blank there. No one can serve God and blank. No one can serve God and golf. No one can serve God and success. No one can serve God and sexuality, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus says at the end of the day, one's at the top.
Right.
You know, one is going to reinforce the other. So that's in essence what we're trying to say. You can't serve two masters, you know. So you have one master, that's it. And again, the Masters is a great, great event. Golf is a great game, but the Masters can't be your master.
That is excellent. I feel a great need to confess something right now. Several years ago, there was a weather alert on Sunday at the Masters, so they moved the round up a few hours. I may or may have not checked the score during the sermon.
It's all right. It's all right.
It happens. Yeah, yeah.
Lindsay scheduled, well, not Lindsay. We scheduled WOCO last year the same weekend as the Texas OU game.
Oh, my.
And so, yeah, so I was, during WOCO, I was watching the Texas OU game during the messages. So
I mean, I had already seen Thursdays and the first one on Sunday at 9:30, but yeah. Full confession here on the Grow People podcast.
Yeah, that's good.
All right.
Back to it.
This has been the Grow People podcast. Stick around for the green jacket ceremony. There won't be one. I remember growing up and seeing churches and deacons, and I wasn't going to those churches, but the deacons were wearing bright colored jackets. Yeah. Maybe that's where it came from.
I don't know.
I don't know. Our producer, Brian Damrow, our video technician. This is how they end the Masters on Sunday. This is exactly what Jim Nance would say. So you're
providing your own music now. Yes, we don't have to dub over.
Yeah. Our video technician is Neon Kian Sadiji. Our key grip, Jakub Puszczykowski. Our videographer is Marcos Guardiola. Our head of doctrine and theology is Theologian. See, when we slow it down like this with the music, it has more impact.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
It has more something.
Our chief evangelist is Salvation. Our backsliding prevention officer is Lukewarm, or the back nine backsliding Salvation. Our director of Swedish witnessing is Bjorn again, two-time Masters champion. Our expert on Russian eschatology, Pitof Hell. Our director of holiness is Mortification. Our staff counselor is Les Moody. Our giving coordinator is Generosity. Let's go down to the co-pastors of Plagues, Manny Locusts and Lance Boyles, playing in their final Masters this year.
Yeah, they've had some issues.
Our Irish eschatology professor and also winner of the Open Championship, Mark O. The Beast. Director of Doctrine of Election is I Am Chosen. Our sabbatical director is Trip Long. Mm-hmm. A director of marriage studies from Romania, Shizma
Betterhoff.
Our missional expert is Sam Aria. Our resident Trinitarian is Holly Spirit. Our strategist for the final battle is Irma Geddon. Our director of... Our doctrinal security officer, is Harry C. Our resident prayer warrior is Neil Down. Our executive director of spiritual warfare is Demonic.
Yeah.
Yes. Our staff cardiologist in charge of deceitful hearts is Angie O'Gram. And our staff golf pro.
Oh, we've added another.
Yes. Yes. Jack Nicodemus. Jack Nicodemus. We do understand that Apple is now providing a transcript for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. And the latest update. We just got that.
If you got the update, 17 point whatever.
Yeah.
There
17
is,
point bumpity bump. As you
17
say.
Point yeah. bumpity boom. There is a transcript, so you don't have to write everything down.
Yeah.
And the best advice we've ever given.
Well, now I'm wondering, like, is it...
Have an egg salad sandwich.
Well, trust God and watch the Masters. Trust God and take a nap while watching the Masters.
Sounds great. See you next week.